Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Let's get to the Astros. Game 4 today, 107 p.m. A reminder that the station will be at Kirby Ice House today, broadcasting live midday show in the loop, and Clint Sterner and the show will be out there this afternoon. This is a game that should have a significant amount of juice. Look, it's a playoff game where the Astros can close out their fifth straight ALDS, but Ryan Tepera, the reliever for the Chicago White Sox, this was a big story yesterday. This just goes to show you that the wounds that fans outside of Houston and media outside of Houston still feel from the Astros stealing signs back in 2017 are very easily ripped open, because all it takes is some no-name reliever to make an accusation that the Astros are still cheating, and it becomes headline news, and it becomes something that people latch on
to. Well, and that's where it becomes almost more annoying. It's not that Ryan Tepera said this about the Astros. It's almost more annoying just that ESPN and everybody else latches onto it so quickly without like really even investigating who this guy is, or you know, why he might have said it, or the fact that the Astros were better on the road than at home this year. All it takes is one guy to make one weird insinuation, and boom, it's front page news.
Knowing that some of you may not have heard the Tepera comments yet, if you've missed them, for the benefit of those of you who hadn't heard them, here's what reliever Ryan Tepera said about the Astros on Sunday night following the White Sox win in Game 3.
They've obviously had a reputation of, you know, doing some sketchy stuff over there. And, you know, it's just, we can say that it's a little bit of a difference. You know, I think you saw the swings and misses tonight compared to, you know, the first two games of Minute Maid. But that's not really the story, you know. We come here to play. You know, we're going to compete. We're not even going to worry about what they're going to do. All we have to do is execute pitches, and they can't hit them anyways.
All right, I love that Lance McCullers is on the mound for the Astros today against the White Sox. Here was Dusty yesterday. Dusty handled this in the best possible way that you handle some no-name scrub coming at your team.
You know, he can say what he wants to say. I had never even heard his name before. You know, we played the White Sox. You know, like, I'm not bothered at all by it, really. Because, you know, most of my life they've been talking stuff on me anyway. You know what I mean? So let them talk.
Okay, he Arian Fostered Ryan Tepera.
Yeah.
Remember Arian Foster back in the day, some dude on the Bengals was talking smack to him, and Arian turned him around and looked at his jersey and said, "What's your name again, bro?" Turned him around.
I have a little bit of a harder time enjoying that with Dusty, because Dusty's done this before in the season where he said that he didn't know about
Trevor Bauer.
He's like, "I've never seen him pitch before." And then they went back and like, "Oh, okay, you actually have coached against Trevor Bauer before."
I believe him here.
And Ryan Tepera's had
Ryan
Tepera's had the, you know, he's got a track record. So yeah, I believe him here.
Okay. I choose to, because it was a good comeback.
He accidentally got an MVP vote a couple years back.
Tepera?
Yeah. He was in the running. Yeah, somehow he accidentally
got
it. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. I hope that person had their vote pulled. you went and did some research. Ryan Tepera.
I did.
Thou doth protest too much.
Quote unquote research, the way we research things these days.
Right.
I looked around on the internet.
Yeah. Good enough for me.
Ryan Tepera. It just struck me as odd that Ryan Tepera had said this. None of his teammates backed him up on it. Tony La Russa probably just wants him to shut up, because now people are bringing back all the old allegations of Tony La Russa cheating throughout the years.
It is a total case of why the hell would you say
why
that?
Is this guy saying anything?
Right.
What the hell? So I started Googling around a little bit and doing some advance. It's hard to, when you, kids, if you're listening at home, it's hard when you're researching somebody who's currently like a hot news item. You got to use the date filter. You got to go back a
right.
week or so, because otherwise everything in Ryan Tepera is all about this.
Yep.
So I subscribed to some little neighborhood newspaper in Brazoria County to try to where he's from.
Yeah.
Went to Brazos Wood High School.
Yeah.
Brazos Wood. And what I found was he was a Cub back around to the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And I started seeing these tweets, curiously, from Cubs fans who, right around late June, were like, oh, Okay, so Tapera was definitely using sticky stuff, right? And what's this all about?
What'd you learn, Stat?
Well, okay. So I started looking for Ryan Tapera sticky stuff. And the first thing that popped up was somebody had done some research, this Robert Breedlove. It said that he lost 240 RPMs off his slider around the time of the sticky stuff.
That's band. A lot.
He lost 600 RPMs off of his chain and changeup.
That's a real around, lot.
Yeah, but you're like, okay, well, okay, what's that really mean? I don't know. Put that in real world terms for me, Stat Nerd Seth.
Yeah.
So I went in and I checked out. I looked up and got his ERA for pre-sticky stuff crackdown on June 22nd. He had a 1.82 ERA.
Wow,
that
wow.
is not bad at all.
No, that's really good.
1.82. Yeah, yeah, goodness
that,
gracious.
Well, that bums me out.
Let's see after the sticky stuff year, 4.05 ERA.
That feels better. Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Tapera, why is cheating on your mind,
yeah,
huh?
No kidding.
Is it because you sucked after you had to stop cheating? And I'm not even sitting here saying that he's awful for having used sticky stuff. Probably. It because a lot of people were.
Sure.
Just like with sign stealing and electronic sign stealing. A lot of people were.
Right.
I'm calling you a damn hypocrite and
that's
a fool.
Right. There you
and Ryan Tapera made a bad mistake. Because honestly, the Astros do a good job of internalizing this stuff just enough. They don't let it distract them. But it kind of, I think it's maybe one of the reasons that they were so bad against bad teams these last couple months. I think the Astros thrive when they've got that little bit of edge, not just from competition, but from other fan bases. Every fan base thinks they're going to be the first fan base that's booed a team or booed the Astros. So I think Ryan Tapera is not going to be welcome in his hometown of Houston any longer. And I think people in Chicago are going to despise him. I would say about, 10 hours from now?
Yeah, 10, 11 hours game from now. 5 or 6 o'clock.
I think the Astros are going to use this as just the right amount of fuel. And I think this extra day of preparation in studying both and Lance McCullers has an extra day of preparation to study, look, reevaluate, look at his pitch selection, all that. I think they are going to absolutely torch the White Sox tonight.
I like where your head's at. Here is Alex Bregman. To Seth's point about the players and how they're handling, I think Bregman is a pretty good compass for how players handle stuff like this on the team. Here's Alex Bregman when he was asked about it yesterday.
Honestly, I haven't been really looking at my phone that much, to be honest with you. Just been focused on playing baseball and what happens between the lines and competing. And we didn't do enough to win yesterday. Today's a new day. Turn the page, flush it, move forward. But to be honest with you, like, just been focused on baseball. That's it. And people can say whatever they want. It's all good.
Yeah, and look, this team has been handling this stuff for over a year now, and they went to an ALCS last year during a COVID year. They won the division this year. They led the majors in so many different offensive categories. The catcalls, the booing, insignificant people like Ryan Tapera, who a lot of us hadn't heard of until yesterday, saying this stuff. I'm with you, Seth. If anything, it's fuel. Like, think about, you hear Bregman there. Bregman is indicative of the business like nature of all the, there's no guy on this team who has this emotional floor and ceiling where you go, well, this guy's going to be affected by this.
Yeah, you never worry that, oh, okay, boy, is this going to turn this guy into something? Like, it can only be a positive. It's either not going to affect them at all, or it will be a positive.
Correct.
It's not going to send any of them south.
That's right.
Bregman, by the way, back in June of 2018, had a walk-off home run against the Blue Jays. He was facing reliever Ryan Tapera.
Ah! Now that is research, my friend. That is research. All right, 713-572-4610. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We just got a tweet from our colleague John Lopez, and if what he's tweeting here is accurate, is this indicative of a big, big move that I've been hoping the Texans might make since I watched the first episode of this year's Hard Knocks about the Cowboys?
Oh.
That is
when
next.
They start, oh, okay.
Yeah, that is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, this is kind of interesting here. John Lopez, who you can hear on In the Loop at 10 a.m. with Landry Locker, you can go see them today at Kirby Ice House. They'll be broadcasting live, as will Clint Sterner in the show. Astros first pitch, 1:07 p.m. in Game 4. John Lopez sent this tweet to a bunch of us here at the station, and he says, interesting. Lamar Johnson Collaborative. It's an architectural design firm with offices in Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, and Los Angeles, has posted a Houston Texans training facility concept design. It's hard to believe a huge, this is Lopez talking, it's hard to believe a huge firm like this did this on spec. The page even uses images of Texans players. There's a J.J. Watt screaming in a Texans uniform at the front of this drawing. Former players, J.J. Watt to wit, and the Texans logo. It seems very detailed. Might the Texans be planning a complete facility redo? And you and I both clicked on the article, Seth, and it shows a rendering of it outdoors. It's a beautiful look. It almost looks like a combination of a training facility and a ski lodge.
Ooh.
And then the inside has really high ceilings. And it's just, it's your classic 21st century new wave training facility that you see the big college programs get. And most importantly, that something similar, maybe not with all the business accoutrements that have gone around it up in Frisco, but a training facility, the likes of which we saw at the beginning of Hard Knocks this year, where the producers flew a drone through all of the Cowboys facilities up there in Frisco, and they are spectacular.
Now, they've got a huge, like, that's Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones is a bigger and better than anybody else, so it's got a huge commercial center around it, too.
Yes.
It's like a city center type of thing, which is all the rage these days. Like, why not? Oh, why build a shopping center? We can build an entire little city. So
that's classic Jerry Jones.
But then the facility itself is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what the first thing I thought of when I saw this is, did they show a picture of the, I didn't see a picture of the actual field, practice field itself.
No, there's only two pictures.
The actual, what I would hope is, and this is kind of the trend, is that the indoor facility would be more of a field house than a bubble. Because the bubble, for the kids that don't know this, you gotta inflate it with air. It's like a balloon. So there's high pressure, and because of that, it has to maintain a seal. So you have these revolving doors. And when when practices would get canceled, and they're like, all right, everybody head into the bubble. Or when there would be a lightning scare or something. And everybody kind of like, guys are in playful mode or whatever. And they go, and you're excited because you're going to go get out of the heat and into the air conditioning. Yeah. It would be terrifying, Sean. You get all these big, dumb idiots like me that are just trying to go through the revolving doors as fast as possible. And those are heavy. I always thought it was just a matter of time until somebody lost a hand or
God
something.
God have mercy if a limb gets caught in those revolving doors.
I know that they're heavy.
Yes.
They're heavy, and you got 320-pound guys running and trying to go through
dude,
as fast
how about
as
us
possible.
Weaklings in the media trying to get in there?
And you're on,
it takes like four of us to push the door open.
And you're on cleats on concrete, too, by the way, while you're doing it.
Come on, McLean, let's do this.
I can't believe I'm still alive. I've done so many stupid things in my life. I do think this is the one thing where this doesn't surprise me at all, because this is where...
You think there's something to this?
Well, I would totally think there's something to it. And this is where somehow people get stuck in their narratives and they have a hard time getting knocked off of them no matter how much evidence there is to the contrary. For years and years and years, people would say that Bob McNair cared more about making money than winning football games, all this. And you could make an argument for it either way. The Texans were never a heavily cash-spending team under Bob McNair. They typically weren't. They were usually around, like, a little bit below 50% on average of the. They weren't cheap, but they certainly weren't big spenders. Since Cal McNair took over, they have spent and spent and spent. Now, does that mean that every decision that Cal McNair has made has been a good one? Of course not.
Yeah.
But I think you gotta reevaluate whatever your complaints are about the Texans and Cal McNair. It's really ignorant to say that they're afraid to spend money. Last year, to their detriment, they spent more cash on football players than anybody else
in
the league.
Any other team.
It was errant bad spending. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It was a bad decision to spend that much money, but it certainly wasn't that they were too cheap. They've also poured a whole bunch of money into the facilities already, the locker room over at NRG, all that.
Yep.
So that I don't, that's not one of my concerns about the Texans anymore. I don't fear that they're not going to spend. My fear is, okay, are you going to spend it on the right things and on the right players and all of that?
Sure, sure. Now, somebody who would know has sent us, texted me Lopez's tweet and said, this is old. it's old news about this.
Oh, what the hell?
No. But okay. You know what? I think this is still a conversation worth having about this facility thing, because I do think that there is, whether people want to admit it or not, on both sides, especially the Texan side of things, when you see the Cowboys have all these nice things up there, there's a feeling like, hey, we're in Texas too. We do things big down here. And I would imagine you look at that bubble that you practice in over there, and it doesn't yield a ton of opportunity to maximize revenue. Like, there is a business opportunity, even with a team where the Texans are right now, and we fully admit that they are on the bottom of a cycle of a rebuild right now on many, many metrics. A facility like this would, A, be really cool. I'm curious from a player's perspective. Like, this thing's really nice. If the Texans all of a sudden built a super nice training facility, like top-notch, with all the bells and whistles, that's, you know, just like through the moon, does that matter to professional players? We know it matters to high school kids coming into college. They get wowed by the big screens, yeah, and the video games and the hot tubs and all the different the areas where you can go play video games with each other and things like that. Does it matter to adults?
It doesn't. I mean, it's like everything else in life. It matters to some and not to others. I do think that there's value in having the perception that you're a team that's willing to spend on players above and beyond. The Bengals would be the extreme example. Remember Jonathan Joseph used to tell stories about just what it was like playing for the Bengals, and this is stuff I heard going back to way back in my day. It's been like this forever. It's been the same owner forever. They'll charge you for Gatorade. They'll charge you if you take too many extra practice socks.
Right.
All that stuff. Every now and then, there's one guy on every team that deserves to get charged. There's always one guy that, like, his entire wardrobe is team issued gear.
All team
issued. Yeah, like, okay, you should get charged. But for the most part, usually, like, so some teams get a reputation for that. Other teams get a reputation the other way. I think the Cowboys have a reputation of, you know, always making it super comfortable for players. So, yeah, in a game of margins, I think that's not a bad thing. And then as far as just the atmosphere that it can create on the team, as far as feeling like ownership and management takes care of you and all of that stuff, I think people appreciate that. I've talked to guys on the Texans who have played there over the last couple of years, thinking of one guy that used to play there but doesn't anymore and had a lot of objections about various ways things were done, but he was also very honest about saying one of the things he said was, like, you know, like they spend on that stuff, like on the new locker room and everything and the dining facility and some of the training, some of the weight room stuff and all that, like, in that Cal's done a good job with that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even people that have been extremely critical and players that have been extremely critical, I do concede that though they're doing some things the right way over there.
Yeah, I've always felt when you're an owner, there's three boxes you need to check. Do you make good hires? Do you spend money and invest the resources? And do you have a team that the community can be proud of? And I think the Texans, I think Cal McNair checks two of those boxes. I think he, to your point earlier, I think he spends. And I don't think he has any problem spending. I really do. I think it's an organization that is very active in the community, and that the community can be, even if they're not proud of the one loss record, you can be proud of the things that the team does to make Houston a better place. They've got to make better hires as players, coaches. You know, we'll see how things work out. They got to make better decisions as to who is doing the jobs on Sundays.
Yeah, the biggest thing about it is I guess there's kind of a standard where, like, okay, you're known as a team that's not going to cut corners on certain stuff. With free agency these days, there aren't that many visits. Not for your marquee guys, I suppose. But maybe. But again, look, Caserio comes from the Belichick school where the Patriots, who, by the way, don't spend much money on stuff like this at all. Like, their stadium, their facility, everything is kind of bare bones.
They may have to start.
They didn't. Yeah. Well, they never used taxpayer dollars though either. Yeah. That was kind of a big calling card.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where, can you find small margins here and there? Does it matter for a few extra free agents per year, and does that add up to wins over time?
All right, Ross Tucker is going to join us in the next segment, Odyssey NFL Insider. Monday Night Football, another bananas primetime game. Boy, the primetime games have been awesome this year. Is Lamar Jackson the MVP of the NFL right now? That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. Astros, 1:07 p.m. first pitch today. Join us out at Kirby Ice House all day long over on East Side between Richmond and West Alabama. Joining us right now, our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Ross, I was telling Seth a little bit earlier, this isn't really a bet, but it's, you know, those suicide pools that people do where you pick a team each week that's got to win. I had Baltimore this week, and I went to bed last night when they were down by 19 in the second half. I'm like, well, all these people who decided to use me as the brains of the operation are going to kill me tomorrow. And then I woke up this morning, and all of a sudden, Lamar Jackson is an MVP candidate. This was a beautiful day today.
You know, it's interesting, Sean, because I was going to rip you for going to bed because you're central time zone, bro. I mean, you should be able to stay up for the whole Monday night game. But you guys are on the air at 6 a.m.?
Well, yeah, and I'm up at 3:45 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Okay, yeah, I get it.
Don't be talking smack about central time zone. I got to tell you, I wear a Breathe Right strip that has central time zone on it. Little, and then I do an eye black underneath hand. I do that CST.
You know what's funny?
I usually do East Coast games, but I did New Mexico State at Nevada on Saturday night. And I'll tell you what's wild, man. I mean, first of all, waking up in West Coast time, yeah. I was watching Oklahoma and Texas at 9 a.m.
That's awesome.
And then I go to bed. I do that game at night. I wake up Sunday morning, 6:30 a.m. The London game is on.
Yes.
6:30 a.m. I woke up right at 6:30 because I had to do the Eagles pregame show. And an NFL game on my TV at 6:30 in the morning that was live. I've said this for a while, and I am shocked that none of these conferences have done it. Like, Seth, you can relate to this. If I ran the Ivy League, okay, I would mandate that one of the games every week, so there's eight Ivy League teams, right? One of the games every week would be at 9 a.m.
Oh, morning. God. Oh,
it would be the only game on at 9 a.m.
Yeah,
and every team would have to do it once or maybe twice. I don't really care for television pregame shows. I don't watch like the pregame studios. That doesn't interest me at all. I would much rather watch any live game. I can't believe like the Sun Belt or Conference USA or FCS conference. Like, how have they not had any of these conferences have a 9 a.m. kick or even 10 a.m. or 10:30 a.m.? It's an hour and a half before any other game starts.
I don't know. Just as a player, I always hated it. Even when I moved from the East Coast to Central to Houston, the difference from playing at 1 p.m. on your body clock to noon on your body clock, and I'm an early riser, that was an adjustment. I don't know. The thought of getting up and playing a football game at 9 a.m. seems foreign to me.
Hey, wait a minute. You just said you're an early riser.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Like a radio show at 6 a.m.
Right, right.
You can do a radio show at 6 a.m., but you can't play a football game at 9 a.m.?
There's a bit of a difference, Ross.
It's 3 hours, though.
Sean doesn't even run a 40-yard dash in less than 5 seconds.
Oh, not even close.
Gosh. Anyway, Sean, I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
That was a pretty wild survivor pool pick, I think. I think that the Colts are actually playing really well. They butchered that game so badly. I mean, you think about a missed extra point. Then they go for two to try to make up for it when they didn't have to do it. Then they have a field goal blocked. Then a missed field goal. I mean, Frank Reich really blew that game. Frank Reich and the kickers totally gacked that game last night for the Colts.
Is Lamar Jackson, where is he on your MVP list right now? Because he's had some serious hero ball games this year. This 4-1 start for the Ravens is built on a lot of really close games where he's made the big difference in these games.
He's very high.
Yeah.
Like, off the top of my head, Herbert, Kyler Murray, Lamar, I mean, he is up there. And I'm about to have a lot of bad receipts come my way because I said again this offseason that I'm just not sure that the Ravens passing game in general, and I guess Lamar Jackson in particular, will ever throw the ball consistently enough on the third mediums, third and longs that are going to happen in three playoff games to win the Super Bowl. I think, what was he last night, like 37 or 42 or something? I mean, he is throwing the ball better than he ever has by far. And what's crazy about it is he missed a bunch of camp with COVID, and all his receivers got hurt. They had, like, no time in training camp to get better. Evidently, it doesn't matter at all. I mean, the older I get, the more I realize practice, totally irrelevant. Working on things, totally irrelevant. All you need to do is just roll out of bed and be crazy talented.
Working on things, irrelevant. That is a take. That is a take
I mean, isn't part of it, though, too? As we get older, don't you always, you have to keep reminding yourself, oh, yeah, not every quarterback rolls out of bed in year one or year two and is a completely finished product. In that sometimes it's too easy to say, wow, Lamar Jackson was really good, took the world by storm, but he wasn't a completely developed passer of the football by year three, so that's it for him. Like, he's never, this position that used to be as a standard thought to take like 4 years to develop, somehow it turned into, well, if you're not Johnny U by your second year, then that's it for
you. Guy's only won one MVP in his first 3 years, loser.
Second year, I mean,
But he wasn't a completely refined passer yet. Like Russell Wilson, it took Russell Wilson really 4 or 5 years to become an actual NFL passer.
That's right.
Now, you know what happens is, though, like Justin Herbert, like there's always one guy that ruins it for all the other guys.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like Tua's not bad, but if you're a Dolphins fan and you watch Justin Herbert, you want to like slit your throat, dude. It's unbelievable. I mean, Tua might be a really good quarterback, but then there's always one guy that you're like think about how painful it is for Dolphins fans to watch Justin Herbert play football. I mean, I know because I talked to him. They can't even talk about it because it would have changed everything. And they literally chose Tua the pick before. And Tua might be fine. But there's always that one guy that ruins it because he's just so good right away.
Yeah, no doubt. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joining us on the show. Ross, I'm curious your take on the John Gruden situation. Not so much from Gruden resigning last night. I think that was probably inevitable, and the things in the emails are deplorable, all of that stuff. I'm curious from the Raiders' side of things, what does this do to their season now?
Probably torpedoes it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because, and honestly, I think it already had an impact on Sunday's game against the Bears.
That I agree.
Was by far
I agree.
The worst they looked. Yeah. And I don't know how, you know what? It's a totally different situation, okay? But the only thing I can compare it to is 2002. I was playing for the Cowboys, and we were playing one of those late season Saturday night games, and one of those December Saturday night games when there's no more college football. And it's a night game, like 7 o'clock, and I'm watching ESPN NFL Countdown because it's still like at 10 a.m. in my hotel room, and Chris Mortensen comes on and he says, a source tells me that Jerry Jones flew to Teterboro Airport in North Jersey and met with Bill Parcells. This is like 6 hours before we even get to the stadium. And you knew immediately that meant Dave Campbell was getting fired. You know, that the whole Cowboys coaching staff was getting fired. I'm starting for the Cowboys that night. I walked into that locker room before the game. You just knew we were going to get hammered. You just knew we were going to get killed because everybody had seen the news. Everybody knew it was like, oh, man, there's going to be a lot of changes here. Things are over. It was just like the ultimate distraction. So not only did we get smoked that night, but then there was still one more game.
Yeah.
And that the whole week it was about, you know, Campo's out and Bill Parcells probably going to get hired and blah, blah, blah. I know for a fact at least 10 guys skipped curfew before the next game. Skipped curfew because they were like, you know, this guy's getting fired anyway. Who cares? So they on an away game, we played the Washington, and a bunch of guys just left the hotel, and I don't know when they got in. But my point is these are young guys, and when there's this kind of news and you don't know what's going on, it affects the preparation, it affects performance, and I don't think they'll be good again this week. Now, they might rally and have a couple of good games here or there, and I'm sure Bisaccia will try to say, hey, you know, everybody's counting us out now. Yeah, they are counting you out because it's just there's not a long track record of people overcoming this kind of thing. No.
Ross, you had said there were two themes to this last weekend's game. What were those themes?
Yeah, it's a shame, but missed kicks, which I just despise, especially extra points.
Yeah.
And too many flags. And in fact, I'm so upset about it that I'm having Dean Blandino, the former NFL VP of officiating, on today's Ross Tucker podcast. Ooh. I usually record power rankings already. I literally am going to do power rankings tomorrow so I can talk to Blandino today. I just don't understand. Like, I watch some of these games. And listen, guys, if it's a clear foul, throw the flag. By all means, throw the flag. What I don't understand is how many questionable and ticky-tack plays they throw the flag on. Who asked for this? Who want this? I can't imagine the owners think it's good for the product. I can't imagine Roger Goodell is watching like Sunday Night Football and seeing some of these flags that are thrown in the Bills Chiefs, like the marquee game of the weekend, and they're throwing a flag every play. Half of them they didn't have to. Roger Goodell must be like, what is? I cannot believe that this is the standard. When I am commissioner someday, I promise you, I will tell the refs, listen, don't throw the flag unless you're sure. Like, if you see a blatant hold or a pass interference where the guy takes him down, other than that, let him play. Nobody wants the stoppages. Nobody wants all these flags. It really is a testament to the NFL and how cool the sport is that there's this many flags and we all still watch. I mean, we're morons. We really are.
Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real proven analytics. Bet smarter. Beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. You can get him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Download all of these. He's got his own one-man podcast empire. Download all of those as well. And Ross, we always appreciate the time, brother.
It's pretty
cool. Yeah, where are you guys going to be later today?
Kirby Ice House for the Astros and White Sox Game 4. 107 first pitch. I will manage to stay up for that entire game.
Central time.
At 107 Central
Time. Tell me about Kirby's Ice House. Sounds amazing.
It's awesome. It's a gigantic bar with a huge outdoor area and a gigantic movie screen that they show the games on.
One thing that we've done here in Texas, somehow bar owners have figured out, like, hey, I can build a really big, cheap pavilion, call it an ice house, and people will come, even though it's 99 degrees out, 10 months a year.
And the genius part of this, Ross, is they don't have a kitchen, but they let a bunch of food trucks park right at the edge of the outdoor area, so they don't have to have all the liability that comes with, you know, the health codes and things like that.
To be clear, they do have
a minute. So you guys are just under a cover?
No. It's a cool build, and they have air conditioning at Kirby Ice House. It's an ice house thing in Houston.
No, it sounds amazing. So literally, your listeners can just go meet up with you guys, watch the Astros, and drink beer with you today.
Yes.
Wow, you guys have a rough job. That sounds amazing.
I know. You know,
Ross, there's
send
flights.
Send me up a private plane.
Yes.
Send me up your private plane, Seth, so I can get down there.
You got 5 hours to get here, man. Flights leaving Philly all the time, man.
That is awesome.
Stay away from South Coast.
How do you not go there? I mean, look, nobody's going to work this afternoon anyway. The Astros are on. So go to Kirby's Ice House and hang out with Sean for sure. Maybe Seth.
I'm not going to be there this time. I was there yesterday.
Yes. Seth and I went. It was supposed to be yesterday, but the game got rained out. So Seth and I went anyways and sat at the bar for 3 hours.
Yeah.
That is amazing. That sounds awesome, though. Have fun.
All right, dude. We appreciate it, Ross. We'll talk next week, man. Keep up the great work.
See you guys.
All right, there it is, Ross Tucker. That was the best liner for Kirby Ice House.
Yeah.
He called it Kirby's, but that's okay. I'm going to send him the video that I shot from there last night when Amy and I went back for round two.
I had an idea because it is true. Like, Ross is correct. It's a very, very fun job. I never complain about this job. And yet somehow sometimes, like anything in life, you want to complain about your job. And I'll hear guys complaining about their radio job. And it just reminds me, of every 80s rock video of like a band on tour where they made it look, somehow they made it, kids, you got to understand, used to watch these Guns N' Roses or Bon Jovi videos or whatever, and they would make it look like being out on tour with groupies after you and people cheering for you was the most depressing, arduous, grueling thing ever. Well, it was
all this adulation.
I'm a cowboy on a steel horse. I ride.
We're halfway there.
People keep giving me the best designer drugs. I feel like we need to do a video of our glamorous life and somehow make it look depressing
mocking 80s rock stars.
Just look at like me staring at the text line, getting agitated about something for some reason.
I've had to watch 3 games today. Oh my God.
They ran out of pecan pie. This is the worst press box
food
experience
in the
ever.
Press box is so bad. There actually are people that complain about that. That always kills me. By the way, that game that Ross was referring to, that when the news broke about Parcells interviewing with the Cowboys, 27-3, they lost to the Eagles on a Saturday night. His memory was absolutely right. And the big loser in that, Chad Hutchinson, sacked 7 times. It truly affected the offensive linemen for the Cowboys that night. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, the Astros game 4 this afternoon, as we just mentioned. Lance McCullers on the hill for the Astros. That is one big storyline in this game. The Astros ace gets a chance to close things out in front of all those Chicagoans who were saying all sorts of mean things to the Stros the other night. They made the decision pretty swiftly yesterday. It had not started raining when they made the decision. Turned out to be the right decision. It poured in Chicago yesterday afternoon. Dusty, very grateful to Major League Baseball for deciding early to move the game to Tuesday.
If anything, I really appreciate, you know, the swiftness that the league office, made this decision. And so that gives us, time to do whatever you got to do. It gives both sides a chance, another chance at resting their bullpen. But, we'll see the effects of it tomorrow. I just didn't relish the fact of, from being so long in Chicago that, you can have extremely long rain delays and hours of sitting around, here waiting to play. So I think this was a good decision by the league.
Okay, so Dusty is using this decision to bump Lance McCullers up to game 4. He's on normal rest, so it's nothing crazy. What are your thoughts on the decision to bump Lance up in the rotation?
I'm okay with it. Look, baseball is the hardest sport for the favorite team to win a series. It just comes down to a coin flip so often. So a 1-game lead evaporates into nothing, and then all of a sudden you got Lance pitching in game 5 anyway of this series. So I get this series in. You could still, if you need him, have him for 2 games in the next series. Framber will be extremely well rested by that point, or you'll have him super fresh for game 5 of this series. I'm all about, as much as I would love to have McCullers in game 1 of the ALCS, I want to get to the ALCS first and foremost.
This will be a real interesting test for McCullers. Historically, over the course of his career, he's been much better at Minute Maid Park. This season, he's actually been better on the road.
Right.
He's been good. This season, he's been good in both places. Yeah. He has not struggled on the road like he normally has. This will be an interesting litmus test for that, because Minute Maid Park is obviously the much more controlled environment for
him. I'm not swayed a whole lot by home and away stats. For almost any stat in any given year, because they fluctuate. It's especially for pitchers, you don't have nearly as big a sample size. So a few bad performances or a few bad matchups, or that road trip was the time your arm was bothering you. And not to mention any of the substantial reasons that you might be worse on the road during the regular season don't necessarily hold up in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You're not on a 2-week road trip. You're not away from the facilities for nearly as long. So the home and away for a pitcher doesn't matter that much, especially given his historical record.
Yeah, I think the other thing to remember with Lance too, Seth, for this season, he's a different pitcher this season.
Yeah.
He has matured into a a pitcher. He's not a thrower anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there will never come a time where Lance is throwing 24 straight curveballs again like he did to get through the postseason in 2017.
Which is exactly what the guys at the plate will be thinking, Sean.
Which means, guess what's coming today?
27 straight
20 jillion straight curveballs, yeah. The other big story with this game is Chicago White Sox reliever Ryan Tepera accusing the Astros of, well, kind of passively accusing the Astros of cheating on Sunday following the game. Here was Alex Bregman when he was asked yesterday about Tepera's comments about the Astros. Huh, they sure do see the ball better and not swing and miss as much at home compared to on the road. Here's what Bregman had to say about it.
Honestly, I haven't been really looking at my phone that much, to be honest with you. Just been focused on playing baseball and what happens between the lines and competing. And we didn't do enough to win yesterday. Today's a new day. Turn the page, flush it, move forward. But to be honest with you, like, just been focused on baseball. That's it. And people can say whatever they want. It's all good.
All right, so that's Bregman. And I think Bregman is a pretty good gauge for the rest of this team. Like, I think his personality mirrors a lot of these guys. There is nobody on this team who I would see, maybe Correa, but I don't see it affecting Correa's performance. Correa might be the one guy who would come back at Tepera and say something, but I don't know that he would do it in the midst of a playoff series. Even Carlos, who has been sort of the unofficial spokesperson for this team on all things related to sign stealing.
Yeah.
I think even if Carlos were to have done media yesterday, I think he would have kept it very vanilla like Bregman did right there. I think probably privately these guys are seething a little bit, but it's positive energy.
In the right way.
I mean, these guys are all very... I mean, look, the seven guys we're talking about that matter in this lineup from an offensive perspective. Maldonado matters greatly. I'm talking about hitters. I'm talking about guys in the box. Tepera is not talking about Maldonado. He's talking about the guys who were still here in 2017. I think all four of those guys, Altuve, Correa, Bregman, Yuli, they're all very even-keeled. And I'll throw Brantley and Tucker and Yordan in there as guys who have come onto this team since the sign stealing in 2017. All these guys, very professional, even-keeled, working the count. They're pros, man. If anything, this thing, I think you put it best earlier, Seth, this thing will not affect them negatively. It'll either be no effect or this will be fuel for them to smoke the White Sox.
Well, I think there's certain times in the series, too, where you can just almost watch and just see where the Astros are this team that's had more playoff experience than just about anybody over the last 5 years. You know, including the guys that have been there since 2015 or some of the newer guys who are young but have still had extensive playoff experience. Whereas with the White Sox, I think they take on the personality of their manager a little bit in that they're kind of super sensitive about... I mean, Tim Anderson is whining about not getting... Tim Anderson strikes out and he chooses to get mad at the pitch selection. That somehow...
He's screaming at Stanek.
Somehow Stanek should have thrown him heat if he were a real man or something. Like, just like all this nonsense. And I think right here, too, though, you also have... Look, you've got a relief pitcher who... had a sub 2 ERA before the sticky ban. Mm-hmm. After the sticky ban, had an ERA of 4+. Kind of a hypocrite here, likely, because there's a lot of people throwing accusations at him. And there's other guys on the team, on the White Sox teams. The Mankata had a PED suspension. La Russa has been accused of cheating in the past. Yeah. Those guys don't want the dumbass reliever to be running his yap the way he is.
How much do you hope Tepera gets in the game, actually?
I hope he gets shelled.
I do, too.
But I almost hope...
You don't have a soul if you don't hope this guy pitches in the game today.
I almost hope that the rest of the White Sox get shelled and that somebody after the game says, like, you know, you don't poke the bear. We've seen time and time again with these various fan bases and teams, they think, how are the Astros going to respond to getting booed at our place?
Right.
Like, all right, I don't know. Altuve might hit a walk-off home run, I suppose. They might end up being the best offense in the AL. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how they respond.
We should mention that on the off chance that the Astros do not win today, Game 5 would still take place tomorrow at Minute Maid Park with a time that is unchanged, that the game would take place at 7:07 p.m. That's because there is no ALDS game on the other side, Seth. Here's the other thing that's at stake for the Astros and the White Sox, honestly. The winner of this series is going to have home field advantage in the ALCS because the Red Sox took care of that business last night. They beat the Tampa Bay Rays 6-5. They jumped out to a 5-0 lead. The Rays came back and tied the game at 5. And the Red Sox, on a sacrifice fly, they win yesterday 6-5. So the opponent is waiting for the Astros in the very next round, Seth. The Red Sox are waiting for that. Well, they're waiting to get on a plane to fly, hopefully here, to play game one of the ALCS.
I got a little greedy when the Red Sox were deep into extra innings in game three. And
that was a hell of a game.
And I thought, I mean, at that point, the Astros were up 5-1.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, here we go. Astros are going to sweep this thing, be nice and fresh. They have Lance for potentially three games if you need to. So it's not going to be quite that.
No. Yeah. No, but the team that I wanted to win for the Astros' sake beat the Rays. They won that series. Like, you want home field advantage. I didn't want anything to do with the Rays in a 7-game series again. They're annoyingly efficient. It was nice for the Red Sox to take care of
them. Major League Baseball didn't want anything to do with the team that is going to have to play half their games in Montreal next year because nobody wants to watch them at home.
That is a great point. Yeah, a great point. Houston-Boston is box office.
By the way, I like playing the Red Sox too because I feel like it's a respite from all of the drama around the cheating and everything. For the most part, most people in both fan bases are kind of like, let's just lay off, right? Okay.
Alex Cora's been punished for both places.
You guys have been punished and the legend shows like, let's just enjoy this baseball series, okay? You don't have to deal with all the other nonsense.
It's heel versus heel. Yeah. Like, are they booing you or are they booing me? Who cares? Who cares? All right, let's shift gears to the Texans. A lot of injury updates from David Culley yesterday in his Monday press conference. Let's start with the one that is most newsworthy, I think, and that is Laremy Tunsil. Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network reporting. Here was David Culley early in the day on Laremy Tunsil.
Laremy Tunsil, MRIs take some time, but are you concerned he may have to miss an extended amount of time?
Not real sure yet. We'll have to wait and see with exactly what the situation is on it. We don't know that yet right now.
Okay, so that was in the morning. In the afternoon, news broke from Ian Rapoport, the NFL Network, that Laremy Tunsil has a UCL thumb issue going on right now that is eventually going to require surgery. May try to play through it. I guess we'll learn more this week. The injury report will be very interesting this week, Seth, as to where Laremy Tunsil is. Is he limited? Is he a non-participant? What does that look like? I think maybe bigger picture for the Texans, the more intriguing thing is the trade deadline's coming up 3 weeks from today. I don't think anybody's off limits for the right offer for this team right now. Laremy Tunsil might be off limits now because if you're a team that's trading for Laremy Tunsil, you're not going to pay market rate for Laremy Tunsil if he's got a thumb issue that could torpedo his season at any time.
What's this going to look like if it turns into a fire sale? Now, John McClain gets very puffy with me if I try to use the term fire sale.
Why?
Because I'm an idiot. You're an idiot if you think it's a fire sale.
Okay.
All right.
Was John in a house
that thinks that's a nitwit?
Yeah.
I don't think he was referring to that directly, but there you go.
I remember we were doing a pregame show, and I had on the show prep on our Google Doc, I had written down, John, is this a fire sale? And it was going to be the next question I asked, and just out of nowhere, he's like, anybody who thinks this is a fire sale is a moron, because it was right after Bradley Roby had gotten traded.
The best would have been if when he was saying that, you happened to be looking at your computer, like looking something up and not really listening to John, and your very next question was, so John, is this a fire sale? Yeah. That would have been great.
So
Tunsil.
Tunsil, okay, this is where I am with Tunsil. Tunsil is a very good left tackle. He doesn't run block nearly as well as he pass blocks. That's been an issue. But he's also playing next to one of the worst left guards in football right this moment, because Titus Howard has not figured it out yet, hopefully. I just look at the Miami Dolphins, who got a king's ransom for Laremy Tunsil, traded away Laremy Tunsil, and they have yet to find their replacement left tackle. Their offensive line is in shambles.
Quarterbacks keep getting hurt.
Yeah, look, did you overspend for Laremy Tunsil? Perhaps, but that's water under the bridge at this point.
Sunken cost.
Don't go chasing good money after bad to try to recoup spending too much on Laremy Tunsil. Plus, once his contract, even though it's exorbitant with the new money kicking in, it's still over time going to end up being a reasonable contract for a left tackle. I think that Unless they have some other objections to Laremy Tunsil that we don't know about, I don't really have a huge interest in trading him away. Like, I'd rather see...
I don't either.
I really like Brandon Cooks, but trading Brandon Cooks makes more sense for this franchise than trading Laremy Tunsil does. So, it's going to suck if I'm at a point where I understand the long-term strategy, but I've enjoyed this team competing in these games. Yeah. I've enjoyed them actually slugging it out with the Patriots. Yeah. Frustratingly so at the end, but actually being in a slugging fest with the Patriots. If all of a sudden before the trade line like, they dump a bunch of people, it's gonna be an empty feeling.
Yeah,
but I mean I'll get it, I'll understand it, but it's gonna be like going to the dentist's office. I know I have to do this.
Necessary evil.
So yeah. I ate all those paydays.
Yep, that's right. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Couple more injury updates from David Culley yesterday. Tyrod Taylor, is he going to be coming off IR this week?
I don't think so. Not really sure yet.
Okay, so we don't know. That'll be another name to watch this week. That sounds like a no to me. Crazy. That sounds like.
Did you do the idea already?
I did. Yeah, okay. I did. Yeah, I just did it.
I put myself in Tyrod Taylor's shoes yesterday. I thought about him. It was actually as when I was on my way to when I was walking into Kirby Ice House, which all of you could this afternoon.
It started.
They opened up at noon.
I think noon. Yeah.
I was walking in because I thought that we were still gonna. I thought Clint and Show were still gonna be there, even though the game wasn't on.
Yeah.
So you and I ended up drinking there. But I was walking in, and my legs were a little bit tight, and I thought, Tyrod Taylor, is it an age where he understands how finicky a hamstring can be and how tricky it is to come back? And yet he's also in his third straight year of potentially being replaced by a rookie.
Right.
So he has to rely on all of his veteran knowledge and not pushing it too hard. But there's got to be a side of him that just wants to get back in ASAP because right. Davis Mills played well. Yep. Played really well. There are some actual record-setting elements for Davis Mills' performance as a rookie versus a Bill Belichick defense.
No doubt.
But he's not there yet. I think Tyrod Taylor still gives you the best chance of winning. If Davis Mills has 1, 2, 3 more promising performances, Tyrod Taylor's probably not stepping back out on that field. So he's got to be really feeling the pressure right now.
It's Lamar Jackson, and I'm not going to say Davis Mills is Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson threw for 442 yards against the Colts last. Like he tore up the Colts last. Yeah. Like it's not been that defense has not lived up to expectations this year.
No.
The Colts.
That's
we'll see what happens.
You know, in the Colts who are everybody's Midwestern darling. Because they had Frank Reich and because Chris Ballard. Chris Ballard's very well respected in NFL circles.
Yeah.
And yet.
The GM.
Yeah, the general manager. And yet, as of yet, undelivered promises. Now, Carson Wentz has been banged up, as he always is. That's who you traded for. Like, I'm not in the mood to keep continually making excuses for people year after year when they're supposed to be the super geniuses.
When you trade for a guy who's always injured, and then he gets injured on your team, that's on you.
Right, right, yeah. Remember when everybody thought that Ryan Grigson was the toast of the town? He was the NFL executive of the year.
He traded
a first round pick for Trent Richardson after Richardson had already been exposed as a bad NFL running back.
Yeah.
And then he won NFL executive. There's something about the Colts that leads people to want to think that they're geniuses or something.
Yeah. Two more
now. Grigson was annoying as a person, and I don't think genuinely bright, whereas Chris Ballard seems like a genuinely decent and, like, really bright dude. It's just there are a lot of it's really hard to be a general manager of an NFL team.
Well, it's been the inverse with the two of them. Like, Grigson was able to luck, no pun intended, like, luck into the quarterback.
Yeah.
And the rest of the roster stunk.
Yeah.
Ballard has actually built, if you look at that roster, you look at last night's game. They drafted Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman Jr. in the second round last year. They were stars last night. They were both awesome, and they've been really good young players for them. They've got a decent offensive line. Banged up, but a decent offensive line. They've got some pieces on defense. Darius Leonard was a second-round pick. They've done a really good job of getting all these other pieces. They can't find a quarterback. Quarterback's been a revolving door for them. So it's almost like Ballard has been like the bizarro Grigson.
Yeah.
They got everything but the quarterback, and the results are like the same. And actually, the results were better for Grigson than they've been for Ballard.
And they haven't actually.
So he got to an AFC title game.
I guess the other question, too, is, okay, are they going to use all of this cap space that they've accumulated?
That's a frustration with Colt fans, too.
Yeah, they just haven't. Is he being. It reminds me of the Celtics with Danny Ainge, where he was accumulating draft picks
just
for
sat
so
on
long.
Those draft
just sat
picks.
And sat and yeah. sat and sat. That's kind of what it feels like with Ballard right now. And people are just. At some point, are you going to spend?